At the end of the world, this is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, joining you tonight, Sunday, the 28th of April, 2013. It has been just an absolutely surreally beautiful, calm day in this harsh place where I live in the San Luis Valley at 8,000 feet in the Colorado Rockies. It has been as balmy as sunny. Today's the first day that my legs have seen the sunshine since last October. And what a mellow day, and I'm kind of taking a cue from that. It was an amazing show that we had last week with Guy McPherson, huge numbers. You loved it. It was extremely powerful, and some big themes were brought up there, and I think I'm going to pick up on those tonight. Just a couple of program notes. I had discussed reaching out to Derek Jensen, which I have done. He's been a guest on the show, I think, three times before. Brilliant man for whom I have enormous amounts of respect. He should be with us sometime in May. I've reached out. We're looking for dates right now. I'll get back to you on that. But also in response to a listener who posted on Facebook asking about having a Native American First Peoples medicine man on to talk about some of their traditions, I'm pleased to report that a really good friend of mine, Sal Jen Carelli, who is a Uipi man from the Godfrey Chips family up on the Pine Ridge area. He lives in Arizona now. He wrote a very incredible, nice, warm, heartwarming, easy-to-read book called Man Among the Helpers, which you can find on Amazon. He'll be joining us, I believe, on May the 18th. I'm going to confirm that tomorrow. So we will do that. We will talk about indigenous ways of relating to the hunt, but also much more. I think we're going to pick up more. Because over the last year, I've been building the case here steadily and slowly that using the objective means and using the logic and the science out there, that we arrive at a spiritual conclusion through non-spiritual means. And as we converge on those truths, it's really good to hear firsthand from someone who is one of many whose spiritual orientation is of intimate, total, complete connection with everything that exists. And that's the position, of course, that I maintain. It's the only position that's going to see us through any evolution or rescue from the state of circumstances and affairs as they exist. Speaking of which, this comes under the heading of just to remind you that things have not gotten any better out there. A great report from ABC News affiliate News 10 in San Diego. It's a TV station. I don't know if they're O&O or affiliate, but it was a really good report. The headline of the story with an attached video, San Onofre Insider says NRC should not allow nuclear restart. That's the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The troubled San Onofre plant is really bad. But this was an extremely well-done report with an attached video. It's up on my Facebook page. San Diego, for the first time, a source from inside the San Onofre nuclear power plant has come forward to warn that restarting the power plant is too dangerous. Quote, there is something grossly wrong, said the inside source, a safety engineer who worked at San Onofre and has 25 years in the nuclear field. Now, they did what journalists should do, is they got an outside expert on the record, Dr. Joe Hopenfield, to corroborate the allegations and the assertion, and we all know they're true. But that's near LA, and they're contemplating a restart there with what they know to be defective. But that's just about as defective as the LaSalle nuclear plant north of Chicago, which had another scram shut down due to a power failure this week. And we have all those 440 or however many of those reactors out there that are all wearing out, falling apart, and the ones in Fukushima that are not fixed. H7N9, now that's the new bird virus, is now being shown that it may mutate 8 times faster than regular flu. This is a Reuters story. And the deaths are up to 23 now, watching that closely, because obviously everything is failing on every front. So all the other conditions, from climate collapse, the economic collapse, and the political corruption, et cetera, are still there. That being said, it's been a week in which I have really begun to feel and see evidence of change in consciousness in many people that I deal with on a daily basis, and I'm welcoming that. But Guy McPherson's appearance last week, I just it just brought up a ton in me, because I've walked for a long time, and it's like I couldn't get angry about the stuff that had happened to me as much as I could get angry about the stuff that happened to Guy. And I was really, really upset because there's a marked contrast both in Facebook and in the world out there. And as people question what's going on, they don't seem to be able to separate or see any reason why it's necessary to separate people who have walked their walk with honor and those who are shameless liars, shameless, have no honor, have demonstrated. And, of course, that includes the Alex Joneses, but there's a lot more. And we're going to talk about some of them tonight. Hopefully, because I've come to the conclusion, and basically this is my visceral gut attitude, that don't even bring up anybody's name to me anymore who doesn't have honor. I don't have time. I've walked this walk too long, and so many people have, and we just don't need to hear it. If you can't trust, if the person has no honor, why would you argue that it's worthwhile to take up something and incorporate something that they say? So I started thinking about people who have taught me about honor, many men and many women, but we start with my father, Ernest Charles Edward Rupert III. My family had this horrible thing about names. Name him Mike when they got to me. My dear uncle, Dr. William Francis Colleton Jr., who's recovering from surgery, who fathered 9 children. He's a devout Catholic. We don't agree on much spiritually, but I have an unbelievable depth of admiration for the man who has lived with complete integrity for his entire life with that. And he was a role model, and all of these people were role models. At LAPD, Jim Votecki, Jack Hoare, H-O-A-R, was kind of a legendary guy at LAPD who I got to work with as a policeman on the street. Assistant Chief Jesse Brewer, who was my captain when I stood up to Organized Crime Intelligence Division in CIA. Professor Alfred McCoy, Professor Peter Dale Scott, Professor Michelle Chosudowski, Stan Goff, U.S. Army Special Forces Delta, retired Skip Mayhawk of the Dakota people, who refused a Medal of Honor in Vietnam because he was fighting in an unjust war and who fought beside Russell Means at Wounded Knee. Russell Means, John Trudell, Major Don Arias of the 1st Air Force, who gave me confirming on-the-record emails showing that a live war game exercise was being conducted by the Vice President's office on September the 11th with an airliner posing as a hijacked airliner. Amazing teachers like Colin Campbell, Matthew Simmons, Arnie Gunderson, Graham Hancock, and Guy McPherson. These are all men who have taught me about honor. So when I talk about it, it's not as if I'm talking about something that I have. We are swimming in a world full of people who have walked their walk with honor for their whole lives. And then there are the women. My mother, Madeline Hunt Rupert, who was a senior cryptanalyst at the Army Security Agency and NSA, who carried many of her secrets to her grave and walked with honor. My Aunt Peggy, who married, that's my father's sister, who raised 9 children in a completely consistent walk of integrity throughout her life. Cynthia McKinney certainly has taught us all a lot about honor. So has Representative Barbara Lee of Oakland, who was the lone member of the United States Congress to vote against the War Powers Act after 9/11. That's what really opened the door for everything else that has followed, and she cast the lone dissenting vote. Vandana Shiva, the great Helen Caldicott, who has always been there, consistent. Kathleen Crowley, former senior special agent, FBI's Minneapolis office, who really blew the whistle on what the FBI was covering up about the so-called hijackers before 9/11. She became Time Magazine's Woman of the Year. Indira Singh, who we wrote about it from the wilderness, who was highly placed on Wall Street in the banking community with the application of derivations of promise software showing that everything was rigged. She stood up and she took. We based a series on P-Tech software. It was one of the last things we did it from the wilderness that scared all of us had amazing courage in Indy Singh. Petra Taukert, a very good friend from Sonoma County. Diane Patterson, whose songs we played. She has amazing honor and integrity. She lives the life she sings, and she sings the life she lives. And last but not least, Sybelle Edmonds. Sybelle Edmonds, for those of you who don't know, and I guess one of the things I've become aware of over the course of this last week again is that I'm old, is that I carry a long record and a long memory of people I have met along the way, heroes, and I have some of the consistency there. Sibel Edmonds made an appearance this week with an amazing analysis on the website boilingfrogs.com. And I believe she was interviewed by the Corbett Report too, but it's boilingfrogspost.com. Boilingfrogspost.com. If you Google Boiling Frogs, you'll get there. I'll save you the story. If you don't know it, just Google the story about boiling frogs. But in a 45-minute or 40-minute tour de force, Sibel Edmonds, who was a former FBI translator, who became an unbelievably powerful, credible, and courageous whistleblower after September 11th, demonstrated a tour de force in intelligence analysis that was so in tune with the work that I was doing at From the Wilderness as I wrote Crossing the Rubicon that colleagues like Michelle Chosudovsky were doing at the time. And she stood up, and I'm going to read you what I wrote about her in Crossing the Rubicon. But what she did this week was she took the Boston bombing, which I was sick of because I was not learning anything new from what I considered to be a distraction. It was obviously serving another purpose, and what hadn't been identified was what the purpose was, and Sibel Edmonds did that. Now, the short version of this, and you can find, again, this video on my Facebook page, and you can find it at boilingfrogspost.com. Boston Terror Update to April 25, update number 2. Thank you. Boston Terror Update number 2, April 25th. The Syria objective is nearly accomplished? That's the title of the video. And I will make this short because I don't want to dwell on it. That's not the point so much as Sibel is herself. I had covered, and many people had covered from 2001 on, that U.S. Army Special Forces, CIA, had moved into the Georgia-Chechen Caucasus region heavily. And what we were doing was we were running training camps, and this was all well documented. And I wrote about guys like Shamil Basayev and Al-Khattab, and Michelle Chosudovsky did as well, and Sibel was right in the thick of this. And our two suspects from Boston both have connections to Chechen separatists. Now, here's what happened with that. Up until now, Chechen separatists were only attacking Russians. Now, since Chechen separatists have allegedly, wag the dog, attacked United States interests, they become not good guys in the United States' eyes, which now opens the door for Russia to have a free hand in extinguishing or dealing with very troublesome Chechen elements, separatist elements, on its southern flank. And apparently in exchange for this, because the CIA has been keeping the political pressure on Moscow, now with this shift in position by the United States, Russia goes after their Chechens and they get to clean up some stuff, and in exchange for that, the Russians appear to have, and Sibel nailed this, agreed to one degree or another for the U.S. to intervene militarily in Syria. Now, Russia still has a commitment to back Iran. This is a high-stakes game of chess, but we have seen signs following Sibel's great presentation that Russia has ordered its citizens to leave Syria, and Russia definitely appears to be weakening its opposition. And we see a move that was just announced on Reuters today, the U.S. Congress now pressuring Barack Obama to take military action for alleged use of sarin gas in Syria. I'm not going to go into all the details of that because those don't concern me as much anymore. We figured out that the world is kind of beyond redemption, so knowing the machinations of the process is not as helpful to us when we realize that climate collapse and all these other things are fully underway and can't be reversed. But Sibel did an amazing job, and let me read to you what I wrote about Sibel in my book Crossing the Rubicon, which was published in September of 2004. This is on page 220 of Crossing the Rubicon. Initially, it was bureaucratic infighting for more funding that derailed important security investigations and questions about contacts of a co-worker with targets of an FBI anti-terror investigation that prompted 33-year-old then, Sibel Edmonds, to blow the whistle inside the FBI in 2002. Hired on an emergency basis and given a top-secret clearance immediately after 9/11 because of her ability to speak fluent Turkish, Farsi, and Azerbaijani, Edmonds was promptly put to work, translating mountains of audio recordings, videotapes, and written communications. By 2004, her complaints were to become much more serious. At first, she heard her supervisors telling her to slow down and not rush important translations. The ostensible purpose for this foot-dragging at the time of great danger was to allow FBI managers to ask for additional funding because they were so far behind. Then she saw civilian translators leaving FBI headquarters with classified material against regulations. The last straw was when a Turkish-American colleague married to a major in the U.S. Air Force disclosed that she had ongoing relationships with a Turkish organization that was an active FBI target. The colleague, Melek Dickerson, suggested that Edmonds should meet people in the organization and get involved. It got worse when Edmonds allegedly discovered that Dickerson had attempted to arrange it so that all translations concerning the Turkish organization would be done by Dickerson exclusively. However, it was also an organization covered in the take, that's the intelligence term given to Edmonds, and she became suspicious. Acting on those suspicions, Edmonds ordered files previously translated by Dickerson, checked them, and found that material information relating to terrorist investigations and espionage had been deleted, left untranslated, or marked as irrelevant. She stood up. She took the blows, and she was amazingly credible from nonstop from when she came out. I think it was in early 2002 or mid-2002, all the way through to the end. And she, like Colleen Rowley and Indy Singh, just demonstrated enormous courage and honor. And when you watch, now when you think about this, and you watch the 45-minute tour de force tape boiling frogs, you will see and you will feel it is tangible, the honor and the clarity that she has in making her presentation. There's an old saying from AA and the 12-step programs that we've talked about so much. If you don't tell a lie, you don't have to remember what you said. And it becomes that much more easy then to put the pieces together and assemble them because you are not trying to remember coherence with legends and lies. You're just rolling with the truth, and it gets easier, and it's always more credible that way. So I am always kind of amazed, and I'm not anymore because I'm just not dealing with it anymore, about how people could, and it happens all the time, take people who have no honor, not just Alex Jones. He's not the only one out there, believe me. We're going to talk about many of them tonight. And because they say something that sounds right, people get all excited and want to run with it. One of the great offenders we will get to later on is Dr. Stephen Greer of the Disclosure Project. But it's just amazed me that people can't sniff it. They can't discern it. And I guess this is where I have begun to appreciate my longevity and more of the purpose that I have been brought to this place for, is because I have the memory of those who have no honor, and I no longer make any excuses about it. We don't have time. There's no honor out there anywhere in the world. But there is in so many people out here, and I guess I'm going to try to edge toward helping us all, and maybe those to whom thinking along those lines is new, be better able to feel and to listen to and to recognize honor when we see it, and to sniff dishonor when we don't see it. So I have two really, really special songs tonight, and as I line them up for this week, I realize that these are two of the most influential songs of my life. And they kind of seem to give opposing messages. But I think in the end, what both of the songs have to do in a very deep way is with integrity. Now, this first song came out in 1970. That's when I was a sophomore at UCLA. It was the year of Kent State, the most violent anti-war demonstration, 70-71. And it was a year when the world was in great, great despair. And there I was, a sophomore at UCLA, interning for the chief of police, knowing what world I was stepping into, and yet I would lock myself up in this car and I at home, and I would sing it, and I would play it full blast over and over and over again, because it spoke so deeply to me. There are three different versions of the song that I checked to see which one to play tonight. And I guess this is just part of being an old guy. It is amazing to hear the singer-songwriter sing a song 32 years after he recorded it in 1970 for his album Tumbleweed Connection. But this version of the song is some of the best advice that I have to give you, because it's from the heart and it's clear, and I hope that it resonates with you. Here, performing with the Royal Academy of Music at the Royal Opera House in 2002, is Elton John giving us all a great piece of advice and acknowledging where we are. Burn down the mission.
Tell me there's an angel in your tree. Did it say it come to call at me? The things are getting desperate in our home, living in the parish of the restless folks unknown.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That stirs the blood. Every time I hear it, it's clean, and you feel that there's no sea anchors, like Guy McPherson and I were talking about. It's a good, clean, honest, clear passion, a sentiment, and it moves the blood. Now, meanwhile, back at the ranch, before we go to station break, from Huffington Post this week, there's a guy named Matt Hickman, who's 64 years old, who lives in Oregon. He's been jailed on 9 serious misdemeanor accounts for stockpiling rainwater. Now, go back and compare that headline against the song that we just heard. Time we put the flame torch to their kips, keep. Nobody owns water. Nobody owns this planet. But Matt Hickman did some impressive stuff. I mean, he's a serious permaculturist. He was building ponds, and he was getting free with water that fell from the sky. And as those of us who understand the relationship we have to reach with this planet, we understand that what happened to him is wrong. We understand that unless that system is burnt down, brought down, or stops, dies of its own weight, we're all screwed. So go to jail for, that's the world we live in. And the emotions that stir, we need to pay attention to them, and they become much clearer when we listen and move with honor. Okay, so this is Michael Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here on the Lifeboat Hour, Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. We are going to take a break. We're going to come back, and then we're going to talk about some people who don't have honor and maybe how we can find some ways to tell the difference between the two. We'll be back right after these messages.
And last verse of the line.
In the Sun of Your Love. That's a song that took us into and out of the station break there. That's a new song from New White Trash, and it's probably the biggest song we have off our new album that we're finishing in bits and pieces. The album is titled Inner Reach. And I want to thank everybody for the amazing response we got after playing Son of Your Love on last week's show. That you will hear that song again. Doug Lewis has been working as we're trying to get together a package to start us and get us funded to finish mixing and mastering and adding some tracks so that we can get the rest of this album out. It's a really good album, Inner Reach. It's what we did during a long, very cold winter here in the San Luis Valley of Colorado. Coldest winter in 30 years. That's a Rod Stewart song. Never mind. But Doug has 9 songs from that album. We have about 16 songs that we want to finish, some really good ones. Up on the New White Trash site now, and there you, good news is you can download them and you can play them for free. When you hit the buy button, just click 00 if that's what you think it's worth. If you want to spend $1, you can do that. If you want to spend $1,000, you can do that. We don't care, but listen to the songs. They're really good, and they're really starting to resonate with stuff that's going on now. So that's newwhitetrash.com. Thanks to Doug Lewis and Mr. Bob Rice in L.A., who's mixing, mastering, playing some instruments for us, and there's just really a good push coming up right now, and New White Trash thanks you. Okay, now let's get back to the subject of honor. I saw a lot of people starting to get hysterically, positively excited about a new movie by the Disclosure Project, which has positioned itself to be the recognized, if you will, alternative, Rockefeller-owned, media and voice trying to tell us the truth about extraterrestrial presence, visitations, existence, and so on and so forth. And I got to tell you categorically that I wrote off Stephen Greer and the Disclosure Project almost a decade ago. First of all, after listening to the pitches, what I heard very clearly coming from them was like, the aliens are going to give us all the energy we want. So there's no need to change the way money works. We can continue to grow and consume exactly like we can, and there will be billions and trillions to be made in the stock market. Well, they failed to acknowledge or recognize the connection, the fact that there's not enough resources to pay off the $1.4 quadrillion dollars in derivatives that are out there, the debt, the 1.5, who knows, the numbers don't make any difference anymore. And if you look at the history of the people who Stephen Greer has been associated with, never acknowledging any need to change the way money works, never acknowledging there's a need to change infinite growth, but he charges $3,000 to see him. As a matter of fact, he's coming to Crestone here, my town, in mid-June, and it costs $3,000 just to get in to see him. And he's funded by the Rockefellers. There's another clue. But one of the worst offenses, and you know, when you watch and see if you have walked with honor, and I think I speak with great clarity, and I don't think I'm presumptuous to speak for all the honorable people that I have known and have mentioned earlier in the show. You get to judge real quickly who you associate with by looking who they have associated with. And Stephen Greer has associated with some of the biggest slime in the world, especially the man who was and may still be his general counsel, Daniel Sheehan, who I outed as a CIA operative at From the Wilderness in October 2003. In an article called Beyond Bush 2, Sheehan had then infiltrated himself into Dennis Kucinich's campaign, which he was then sabotaging. He was one of the last people to see Karen Silkwood of the Kerr-McGee nuclear case alive. He is the man who single-handedly sabotaged the Christic Institute lawsuit by submitting a perjured affidavit, making up names as the lawyer for the lawsuit, which resulted in the Christic Institute lawsuit and probably the tens of millions of dollars that people like Jackson Brown or people like Aris and Agnos of Los Angeles, that people had put forth wholeheartedly believing the Christic Institute lawsuit was about exposing CIA drug trafficking, all the people that I'd been fighting. Daniel Sheehan destroyed that, and then he came along in 1992, 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, and destroyed the case with the family of Colonel Jim Sabo, chief of air operations at El Toro Marine Air Station in Southern California, who was murdered because he caught CIA C-130s bringing 2 and 3,000 kilos of cocaine onto the base at a time. And Daniel Sheehan also became the lawyer for the family, posing as a good guy, and destroyed that case, too. And I wrote about it in an article at From the Wilderness. You can go to fromthewilderness.com and type in an article called Beyond Bush 2 and just scroll down to Sheehan. And all the links are there, including witness statements and accurate journalist reports. So now we have a known CIA operative working with and also associated with Stephen Greer was Gordon Novell, late a CIA who died this last year, a former CIA guy. And I can't believe the stupid, gullible, lying idiots out there who believe that Gordon Novell was actually telling them the truth because they got to talk to a CIA guy. Let me get something straight, and this makes it easier. I have yet, and I've met two in my life, to meet a billionaire who has my best interests at heart. The Rockefellers certainly are not going to tell me the truth any more than the Gambles in the fraudulent movie Thrive were telling us the same story. No need to change the way money works. There's been, you know, and who did I find in the movie Thrive again but Daniel Sheehan and another woman who has absolutely no honor, and that's Catherine Austin Fitz, with whom I was associated for a great many years. Catherine Austin Fitz, when I was extremely ill after having been poisoned in Venezuela when my computers were smashed, was part of the group trying to trash my reputation. And she, the last time I spoke to her on the phone in Venezuela in 2006, she said, I'll give you, you need money, okay, I'll give you $2,000 if you give me all the copyrights for everything that you have ever written, and you promise never to come back to the United States again. So we all get bit from time to time, but and Catherine Austin Fitz was in Thrive. So you have, you know, what I would hope somehow is that by educating, because you can look at people by the way they have walked. I mean, you cannot, if you know who they are, put an Arne Gunderson, put a Guy McPherson, put a Sabelle Edmonds, put a Cynthia McKinney in any of the same places energetically as you do a Stephen Greer or Thrive, nor can you do that with Amy Goodman. who I am sick of hearing about him. I know people still worship her. She's syndicated by Rupert Murdoch, Dow Jones Newswires, and she was one of the most brutal gatekeepers for any investigative journalism about 9/11 for 4, 5, 6, 7 years after the show, after the attacks. Instrumental in helping to get me banned, if you will, for a while from WBAI and behind the scenes at KPFA, you know, and she makes all this money. That's another thing. It costs $3,000 to see Stephen Greer. Amy Goodman is syndicated, and Democracy Too Late. It has to be credible. That's what her show should be called. And I get insane about people now who even still want to bring up Michael Moore, who was one of the worst, slimiest betrayers of people who were seeking justice ever, because he actually made people feel good, but he wound up flying around the country in a Gulfstream 5 with box seats at the 2004 Republican convention. What I'm getting at here for all of us is that there are obvious signs to look out for, and I would submit at this late date, at this late juncture, we don't have time to listen to. There are so many people out here who have bled, who have walked, who have demonstrated honor and integrity over and over again, and I'm just tired of seeing them ignored. We had Robert Hastings on our show, who, an incredibly honorable guy, he's a neighbor up here in the San Luis Valley, who talked the right talk about ETs. And now what I'm beginning to sense, after having many, many years of questioning about why honor was so important, it's like there's no debate at all. And I will call people who have no honor the instant I see them, and I will call the people who trot them out and run them out without learning how to exercise judgment, without learning how to read energy, without learning how to ask basic questions before getting all excited about issues. Because, you know what, I was just so angry for the way Guy McPherson's been treated. It's like I couldn't do it for me, but then I started thinking and remembering all of these people who have so inspired us and who have sacrificed so much to tell us the truth. They have walked their walk, and in the indigenous world, honor is everything, for good reason, because it's the first thing that's checked. And I have carried my message with honor. I mean, to the point where when the documentary Collapse was going to come out in 2009, after lying fallow for 3 years, a sexual harassment case was resurrected to try and trash me right before the release of the movie. Well, lawyers were on. It was a big political thing in Oregon, and it was ultimately proved to be a horrendous political setup. But I had some inheritance from my father then. Well, I ran through about $80,000 in legal fees as the movie was being cut and getting ready to be processed. And when I ran out of money, I went on my own and represented myself at a state labor commission hearing in Medford, Oregon, which was an absolute mockery of a trial. The Soviets used to do just as good. And I got some big licks in. There were multiple counts of perjury on the other side. And, of course, the decision when it came in had nothing to do with the facts of the case. And just before the movie was released, the state labor commissioner said that I was a sexual harassment, a 5-time award larger than any other emotional in the state, and I was a fugitive in Venezuela, and they were going to hunt. I had just represented myself in Medford, Oregon. And I was appealing to the Oregon State Supreme Court, ran out of money, but I made the point, and I got them to the point where multiple admissions were made, and no one in the state of Oregon will touch that. And when the movie first appeared, because I had gone up there and faced them, and that was a horrendous ordeal for me, taking all the money I had, taking all the energy that I had, but I knew that I had to stand there to defend myself, and I did. Nobody will touch it now, but at the first 5 premieres of the documentary Collapse, and when I did Q&A, I said, any members here from the press you want to talk about sexual harassment, come. Nobody would come near it. They still won't. And that's what people who have honor do. You stand and you defend it, and you walk to keep it clean, and when you make mistakes, to clean it up. But people who willingly lie and falsify stories like Alex Jones, well, they could be redeemed if they stood up and admitted to all the stories they had ever falsified. But they won't do that. But that's what people with honor do, and I'm tired of seeing them treated with disrespect. Really am. And we just don't have time anymore for that. And really what I've kind of sensed as I've wrestled with these issues for a while, especially as it's become clear now, and as we've learned from the revelations from people like Graham Hancock and others talking about the ayahuasca journeys, is what happens is when you go on those journeys, you face the shadows, you face the fears, you face the unaddressed inconsistencies in your own life. And the ones who tend to defend Alex Jones and Amy Goodman and Michael Moore and Stephen Greer are also the ones who, from my opinion, I could be wrong, but I don't think so, who have been utterly afraid to go inside and clean up the shadows in their own life. And this is all a time now about shadows. It's all a time now about facing apocalypse, meaning revelation, meaning like showing the truth. All of this stuff now is pointing in two directions, and I am seeing a clear separation. I'm seeing more and more people respond more lovingly and honorably and openly. I've seen this three or four times. Couples recently who have met, and this really is a reunion of soulmates, and I salute that, and I love it. I think it's a good time. I think all souls and soul families need to be brought together, and there's a lot of shifting going on around that now. Now I'm going to set up, let me just put this up, and I'm going to set up the second song. And if you want to call in tonight, if anything that I said stirs anything in you that you want to talk about, you can call in at 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. Now I'm going to set up the second song, which is, again, one of the most influential and powerful songs of my life. And it's amazing how it all resonates with our lessons about you can operate from either love or fear. This song came out at the end of the 70s, 78, I believe it was. And it was an amazing singer, Jerry Rafferty, who died just in January of 2011. People remember Jerry Rafferty from amazing songs like Baker Street, one of the best rock and roll songs of all time, Right Down the Line. And probably, I guess, the one almost everybody knows, Steeler's Wheel, Clowns to the Left of Me, Jokers to the Right, Here I Am, Stuck in the Middle with You. Rafferty was born into a working-class Scottish family, and his mother taught him both Irish and Scottish folk songs, and you'll hear that strong influence, especially with his harmonies. And he drew a clear distinction, again, this has to do about honor, between the artistic integrity of a musician on the one hand and the music industry's need to create celebrities and sell products on the other. And he was almost a true purist like that. He didn't like to perform live. And didn't like being famous, but he was so good. And his stuff's been covered by so many people like Bonnie Raitt and so many others, but he left a huge mark. Now, when this particular song came out, and I'll come back and talk to you after it's over, I was at a place where I didn't know what was what. This was 1978, the year I resigned from LAPD. I had been betrayed by a woman I loved. Nothing made sense. CIA was dealing drugs. The LAPD was corrupt. And I did not have the big picture then. And there was just such an amazing hunger. And when I heard this song, it gave me a clue as to where True North might be. And after all of these years since 1978, it still does boil down to this song, the title of this song, Whatever's Written in Your Heart. Here's Jerry Rafferty.
said this time I might get through. I heard her speak, but all the words were dead. We talked all night and left it all unsaid. So we agreed to disagree. At least we got our memories.
Terry Rafferty, whatever's written in your heart. And I guess that's the big question right now. And so I would ask, as I sign off on this program tonight, that you go in and check there, because what we have been surrounding for the last year in our journey here is the fact that what vibrates in our heart, the energies that we carry there and vibrate, are what will make a difference as to where we go. And if you can't quite hear what's there, then go inside and look and see if there's anything you need to clean up to allow that great energy to escape. Because as Crazy Horse said, when we both find that same place at the deep center of ourselves, we will all be of one mind and there will be no conflict. This is Michael Rupert, Tracker of Truth, on the Lifeboat Hour here at Progressive Radio Network. I'll be back with you next week. I love all of you. We'll see you then. Bye.